Hello, everyone. I wanted to be honest about something, and I'm so grateful that I will be doing this whole episode off the top of my head. Here we go. I must admit that 5-year-old Antonio within me is still longing and hoping and attracted to the concepts of, you know, Jesus being the Lord, the Savior, the Messiah, the King, not to be heteronormative, and the Son of God. Because I did not get a chance to enjoy being a Christian when I was in the Christian church. I came to Jesus hurting. I came to Jesus confused. I came to Jesus despondent. And I came to Jesus in stunned shockness from the organized crime part of my childhood. And there's this 5-year-old within me, child Antonio, that still hopes that everything he was taught about church is true. I'm acknowledging that within adult Antonio, there's child Antonio. So what I'm about to say, I'm putting in proper context to understand. There's a part of me that hopes that what I was told about Satan and demons and archdemons and archangels, all of Jesus' miracles and all the miracles in the Old Testament, New Testament, even after the book of John, and all the supernaturalism of the Bible are true. So I acknowledge that the dichotomy between 5-year-old me and the doubts that have been in my heart since I was 5. Because of just organized crime, you know, when you're introduced to Jesus and being introduced to criminalization as well as thumbing their noses up and flipping middle fingers at the law enforcement, I did not get a chance to come to Jesus in peace. I did not get a chance to come to Jesus with all the joy that I would have liked to have felt because of what was happening to me at that time. I am still wrestling with my views on religion. There's a part of me that hopes, there's a 5-year-old within me that hopes that the Bible is inerrant, infallible, completely divinely inspired, completely divinely breathed, and that sola scriptura is the truth. And I know a lot of people who are secular would go, how? Why? What do you mean? How could you say such things? My life is filled with unexplainable dichotomies. Because imagine you become a Christian around the same time that you're forced to sell drugs, that you're forced to sell alcohol, that you're forced into child prostitution and you're forced to be someone's child, other people's child prostitutes, because I did have more than one madam against my will make me their personal sex slave. Not just when it came to other adults, but they would also make sure that they raped me for free, and that they would rape me, get paid for it through other people. And imagine being forced to sell bootlegged everything, and I was even forced to sell, you know, cigarettes, cigars, blunts, joints, and even pornographic magazines and porn tapes to people when I was a child. So it's not easy for me to say what I'm saying when it regards to religion, because there's a part of me that hope, there's a 5-year-old within me that hopes that there is a Holy Spirit and that there is, you know, a God who's the Most High. And it's tough, because when you're told these things, it makes life more... When I was 5, being told these things by my grandma Clara, it made things more easier for me to understand in some degree. And to other extent, I still had things that made it hard for me to understand at the same time. How is divine intervention true? But there are customers of mine against my will who rape me after purchasing drugs from me, and I'm 5. I didn't have the vocabulary to say these things at this time. So I deal with that every day, and it's hard. Like the 5-year-old in me, every time he would see a Clubhouse app room that are filled with believers, I would still go in those rooms. It's the 5-year-old in me that has been doing that. Because it's so hard to imagine life without Jesus for me, because he was the only way I could overcome organized crime. And at the same time, I'm being introduced to science. I'm being introduced to scholarship and academia and data and facts and research. And it's still I still have a tough time with the debunking of what I was taught, because I am a realist, I am a pragmatist, and I am practical, and I'm also a rationalist. So to explain these dichotomies are hard for me to do. You know, it's like, I know that overwhelming scholars have debunked a lot of what's in the Bible. However, imagine you're taught traditionalist Christianity, you know, the standard textbook, by the book Christianity that our grandparents value. Imagine being taught that, and that was your only way to overcome. And that's what was true for me. I was 5. Yes, I had school, but school wasn't as helpful for me to overcome. Because I wasn't always in school, and organized crime, me being in it, shows that I wasn't always in the classroom. Even schools have a limited amount of hours that they could be open. You know, I think... I never got a chance to enjoy being a Christian, because also when you're labeled with autism, a lot of the believers are not going to understand you, they're going to misunderstand you. And they're not going to know what to think of you a lot of times. Of course, most of them will be nice. Most of them will treat you as if you're someone they want to talk to and actually talk to you. But in terms of knowing why you think, how you think, when you think, where you think, and what you think, who you think, they're not going to understand. So a lot of times in church, I did not understand my place in it. A lot of times I did not feel validated or affirmed. I didn't even feel confirmed. So the subject of religion is very difficult for me. Because we all have an inner child. So imagine an inner child is like, the adult me understands the debunking of a lot of things through trained professionals and with church and the Bible. But the five-year-old means like, but this is all I know. You know, besides school, school helped, but it didn't help as much as knowing that at least, you know, when I was a child, I felt that when I die, I'll be going to a better place. Sometimes I didn't think I would make it to 18 when I was in that world of organized crime. I thought at any moment I'm going to meet God in paradise. So imagine the adult you with all the understandable skepticism, but you also have a child you that's like, but this is all I know that my grandma Clara taught me. It can't be any other way. I don't want to feel like my grandma Claire lied to me, because I don't think she'd ever lie to me, especially on purpose, you know. And it's hard for me because the five-year-old me still imagines it's tough, man. Sometimes the five-year-old me still imagines being in church, enjoying church, preaching, and all the stuff that my grandma Claire taught me that is quite helpful. I still imagine that stuff. The adult me is more like, but Antonio, look at how you were treated. Look at what science says that religion doesn't say, and look at what religion says that science doesn't say, and look at how there's a rate, there's disparities of racism in the church world. Look at how ableist a lot of churches are, and when it comes to abuse, do they talk about it? A lot of them don't. So I wouldn't call it a tug of war. I'm not fighting my child self. I'm having loving conversations with my child self. And I'm still, me and my child self still came to the conclusion that we can, I wouldn't say, we both agreed that my grandma Claire didn't lie to me on purpose, because she taught me what she knew. And she came from a caring place, so I'll never say she lied to me, because that's disrespectful to her intentionality. What I will say is all the concepts she taught me, I interpret them all figuratively. I interpret all religious concepts figuratively. I interpret all I interpret all the concepts, all the religious texts, T-E-X-T-S, figuratively, because I don't mind science verifying what happened. whatever the truths are or are not. The five-year-old me is more of, but isn't this all literal? My grandma didn't say figurative. She, you know, this is all historical, and in the church world, this is what happened. Church didn't say figurative, isn't it literal? So, like, we all have things about us as children that our adult selves and our child selves, sometimes it's not hypocriting, it's more of what you knew then and what you know now. Of course, there's going to be differences between you as an adult and you as a child. That's just understandable. That's comprehensible. And so for me, it's like parenting my child me. And I wrestle with this stuff. I do. You know, when science and scholarship, they did not find any evidence what the Bible says. That was a crushing, stampeding of my inner life that I felt and still feel. And at the same time, my child self is like, but, you know, I believe all that stuff. My child self tells me that. We all have conversations with our inner child. Some of those conversations are difficult. Sometimes they feel dichotomous. And it's not a bad thing, because I'm reconciling that these concepts, as long as I reinterpret them figuratively, then I don't have to be angry with my grandma Clara, because I was never really angry at her. Because if she could have stayed longer to guide me through these things, to really talk to me about these things, she would have. If she had the power to say, I want to help my grandbaby learn more about what I'm saying, and I want to be there for my grandbaby, you know, with these doubts and skepticism, she would have. So because I know that about her, I've never been angry at her. I was just angry that, you know, she left Earth when, and it wasn't her choice to leave. So the fact that, and if she chose to leave, let's say she did, it would have never been based upon leaving Antonio stranded. That was never the case. So, and then, in regards to sex, here's what I talked to my inner child about, because my grandma Claire never really talked to me about sex. I was five, so go figure. Makes sense, right? Anybody, any adult would hear that, and any adult with sense would go, oh yeah, you know, you shouldn't be talking to a five-year-old about that. Yeah, you know, age appropriate, absolutely. So I'm not mad at my grandma Clara about that. I feel that when it comes to sex for myself, and this is what I tell my inner child, I say, this is my inner child, so I'm being appropriate with myself. Self-appropriateness, right? Absolutely. I tell my inner child, sex should always be free of violence, haughtiness, lying, murdering, scheming, false witnessing, dissension, stirrups. Eagerness to do wrong. I always tell myself that sex should always be free of wicked thoughts, wicked deeds, wicked actions, wicked words, wicked hearts, wicked bodies, wicked memories, wicked souls, wicked tasting, wicked touching, wicked smelling, wicked hearing, wicked feelings, wicked sensations, wicked auras, wicked energy, wicked concentration, wicked tone of voice, wicked body language, wicked gestures, wicked speech, wicked ways, wicked surrendering, wicked sacrificing, wicked judgments, untruthfulness, wicked pride, wicked sights, wicked settings, wicked circumstances, wicked times, wicked audiences, wicked reasons, wicked intentionality, the wicked participants, wicked content, wicked times, and sex should always be free of wicked many times and wicked many ways. That's what I tell myself, my inner child, when it comes to the subject of sex. I tell myself that sex should be filled with wholesome kinkiness, wholesome sensuality, wholesome sex and wholesome sexuality, wholesome shape-shifting, wholesome romance, wholesome intimacy, wholesome vanilla, wholesome conventional sex, wholesome unconventional sex, wholesome eroticism, wholesome exoticism, and that when it comes to sex, people should be wholesome explorers, wholesome fair traders, wholesome givers, wholesome guardians, wholesome passion pursuers, wholesome pleasure seekers, wholesome prioritizers, wholesome romantics, wholesome spiritualists, meaning compassion, neighborliness is what I'm referring to, and wholesome thrill seekers. That's what I tell my inner child all the time. I tell my inner child that there should always be wholesome written erotica, wholesome audio erotica, wholesome visual erotica, wholesome pornography, and wholesome sex on television and movies. Wholesome intimacy coordinating, wholesome intimacy choreography, I think that when it comes to my inner child, I tell myself that sex should be filled with diligence, not laziness. Sex should be filled with self-control instead of people being sexually undisciplined. I tell myself when it comes to sex that sex should be filled with selflessness as well as self-care. This is also what I tell my inner child about the subject of sex. Sex should be with wholesome knowledge. It shouldn't be senselessness. Sex shouldn't be something to endure. It should be something that is a form of meaningful maturation when it comes to all of the partners involved. I've learned that when it comes to sex, that people should have control. This is what I tell myself regarding sex that people need to think more about. This is what I tell my inner child, that when it comes to sex, people should have controlled tongues. Those with this sexual speech pattern think before sexually speaking. They know when verbal sexual silence is best, and they give sexually wise advice. That's the sexual control tongue, because they also should know when sexual speech and sexual noise and sexual noise pattern should be best made and how to be best made. When it comes to sex, there should be the sexual caring tongue. So those with this sexual speech pattern speak sexually truthfully while seeking to positively sexually encourage. So let me repeat those both one more time. So you have the sexual control tongue. Those with this sexual speech pattern think before sexually speaking, knowing verbal sexual silence is best, and they give sexually wise advice. The sexually caring tongue. Those with this sexual speech pattern speak sexually truthfully while seeking to positively sexually encourage. Okay. Then you have the sexual conniving tongue should never happen. Those with this sexual speech pattern are filled with wrong sexual motives, sexual gossip, sexual slander, and a gruesome desire to twist sexual truths. That is also a gruesome sexual desire to twist sexual truths too. Horrible. The sexually careless tongue. So those with this sexual speech pattern are filled with sexual lies, sexual curses, sexually quick-tempered words, which can lead to unwholesome sexual rebellion, unwholesome sexual destruction, meaning that you are assailing people's sexual personalities and you're assailing their erotic blueprint types. So those are things that people have to think about. So let me do them all again. This time I'm going to talk about the noise patterns of sex, okay? So you have the sexually controlled sounds. Those with this sexual noise pattern think before sexual noise making. They know when the noises shouldn't be used. They know when noiselessness sexually is best, and they give gestures and clues and hints and direct body language that shows that it is time to make those sexually wise noises. And then you have what I call the sexually caring sounds. Those with this sexual noise pattern, they utter truthful sexual sounds in the midst of seeking to positively sexually make the sounds that they know that their lovers respond best to. And it's all genuine, just like the sexually controlled tongue speech pattern, the sexually caring speech pattern. Okay, then you have the conniving sexual sounds. Faking orgasms, if you will. Those with this sexual noise pattern are filled with wrong sexual noise motives, wrong sexual noise gossip, wrong sexual noise slander, and a gruesome desire, to twist sexual sounds and noises truths. And then you have what is called the sexual careless noise. Those with this sexual noise pattern are filled with lies relating to sexual noises and sounds, curses relating to sexual noises and sounds, quick temper words which relates to sexual noises and sounds, which can lead to rebellion, destruction, because rebellion, destruction related to sexual noises and sounds, because it's all about you're dishonest about saying that you had multiple orgasms but you didn't. You're dishonest about saying that you had full body orgasms and you know in your heart that you did not have that either. So, people, I've learned that when it comes to sexual speech, no lies, no curses, no quick temper words, no rebellion, no destruction. When it comes to sexual noise making, sexual sound making, no lies, no curses, no quick temper words, no rebellion, and no destruction. When it comes to sexual speech and sexual noises, no wrong motives, no gossip, no slander, and no desire to twist truth. When it comes to sexual noises, sexual sounds, and sexual speech, you should have thinking before speaking and noise utterances. Knowing silence is best when it comes to sexual sounds and noises and speech, and giving wise advice, body language, or verbalization in regards to sexual sounds, noises, and speech. And speak truthfully when it comes, sexually speak truthfully while seeking the positive sexually encourage, as well as make sexual noise and sexual sounds that are truthful while seeking to positively encourage through sexual noise and sounds and speech again. So those are the things I tell myself. When I say curses, I'm not saying you can't curse. What I'm saying is don't say things that could destroy a person's self-esteem. Don't make low self-esteem affirming statements. That's what I'm talking about. So those are the things I tell myself sexually. And to sum it all up, I have the sexually controlled tongue. I have the sexually caring tongue. I have the sexually noise-making, sound-making. I have the sexually controlled sound-making and noise-making. And I have the sexually noise-making, sound-making, caring as well. In other words, I'm sexually caring when it comes to my sexual noises, sexual speech, and sexual sounds. And I'm sexually controlled when it comes to my noise-making speech and sounds, you know. So those are things that people have to really, really, really consider. And now, back to organized crime for me. I grew up in a world where people were made fun of if they were too hairy or too hairless when it came to genital regions and when it came to body hair. If you did not have the hair standards of our Western European cultural beauty, you were demeaned. And you were debased at the same time. So me sharing these things is really, really healing me because I think for me in my heart, maybe dichotomy is not the right word to use regarding my inner child and my adult me, because that could potentially create an adversary between us, and I am not an enemy of my five-year-old self at all. I am a true close best friend of my child self. So I'm still, you know, managing my verbiage to make sure that it most effectively speaks the truth in the most accurate, correct way possible in a judicious, cautious manner. So those are the things that I have faced in childhood that I'm really thankful to talk about. And, you know, when I get this out, I do want to admit, as I wrap up now, that I don't mind being in rooms with believers on any app or in person, as long as they're able to really understand me. And me being in these rooms and things on the app, it's not about being heavenly minded but not earthly good. Unfortunately, that's what the church has become. They're so heavenly minded that the church so heavenly minded that the church is no earthly good. I'm talking about a balance between heavenly minded and being earthly good. And I hope I can be around believers who have that excellent balance. I'm not saying they have to be perfect at it. What I'm saying is that I hope they are usually good at it. And so me being in those rooms was more about, when I think about it now, trying to re-experience church in a way that wasn't hurtful, that wasn't confusing, and in a way that's not what it was in the past, because I'm still open to being around church people and church in regards to, I don't mind being treated with kindness by the church and church people. And so when it comes to like, it's not about me trying to be I'm not trying to force religion on anybody. My goal is to say, when it comes to my healing, I don't mind being around people who mean me well, who really want to love me neighborly, compassionately. And a lot of those people are in the church. So, don't get me wrong, I do experience compassionate neighborly love from secular people and people who are of faith, but they're not Christians. But I'm also willing to accept neighborly love from Christians. Because in my life of healing, I recognize that I know that not everyone in the church is a part of the problem. I know that not every secular person is a part of the problem. I know that not every faith-based person who's not a Christian is a part of the problem. I know those things. So because I know that more of them mean me well than the handful that have not, I don't lump all of them with the handfuls of all three. In all actuality, I'm looking forward to experiencing church in a healthy way. You know, like a healthy community of people who believe. I'm looking forward to experiencing another type of community that's healthy, that don't believe. And the ones who believe, but they don't Christian believe. They may Muslim believe and Judaism believe. But I'm looking forward to all the community that's a mixture of believers and non-believers, because both can help me to live life wholesomely based upon, you know, the insights they both have can help me to interpret life in healthier ways. So I'm not into secular discrimination. I'm also not into religious discrimination. I don't desire to obliterate religion, because then that would give religionists the right to obliterate secularity. And I'm like, I don't want to go down that needless rabbit hole, so I just let that be. And then, for myself, I get to experience secular people and secularity better. I get to be around even non-religious people, but I no longer feel engulfed by the trauma like I was made to feel back then. And when it comes to you know, even being around believers who, they're not Christian believers, but they are of faith, you know, Muslim, Judaism, what have you, as the quick examples I come up with right now, I recognize that they can also help me interpret life better, because I think that there's good things that all religions have in terms of the values, even values that secular people live by. I'm talking about that. So that's truly what I focus on, and I'm grateful that I have this time to share that. And I want to mention, and this is the best way for me to conclude, I would say that organized crime, as well as the organized crime, sex and sexuality, from what I was forced to see, is evil, destructive, self-centered, oppressive, possessive, decadent, deadly. Always easy to ignite in the name of unwholesomeness. And I dare say it was sinful. I dare say it was a living, breathing nightmare. Because in organized crime, the sexually wrong desires, for example, organized crime is filled with sexual psychopaths, sexual sociopaths, sexual narcissists, and sexual psychopaths. So I tell my inner child that sex should always be good, productive, easy to ignite in the name of wholesomeness, liberating, nurturing, nourishing, uplifting, abundant life. It should be of wholeness, and it should be others giving and self giving at the same time. And it should, the sex should not be stifled. That's how I would define the word holy in regards to sex. That's what I tell myself. So I tell myself that sexual psychopathy is pure evil. I tell myself that sexual sociopathy is pure evil. I tell myself that sexual narcissism is pure evil. I tell myself that sexual psychopathy is pure evil. And I think that sex should be filled with compassionate love, compassionate joy, compassionate peace, compassionate patience, compassionate kindness, compassionate goodness, compassionate gentleness, compassionate self-control. And it should have a faithfulness regarding the never-ending honoring of the full humanity of the other partners involved, and not just strictly and only yourself. In organized crime, I witness sexual hatred, sexual discord, sexual jealousy, sexual anger, sexual selfish ambition, sexual dissension, sexual arrogance, sexual envy, sexual greed, sexual lying, sexual stealing. I witnessed the unwholesome type of sexual wild living, not the good one. In organized crime, I witnessed they had their own idolatry to sex and sexuality that tended to be abusive. That's what made them have impure hearts and immoral spirits. And they were of impurity and immorality relating to sex and sexuality, because they used sex and sexuality to make it their sexual world domination in the name of toxic masculinity, hyper masculinity, patriarchy, cis heteropatriarchy, cis normativity, cis sexism, heterosexism, and heteronormativity. As well as making women feel like you have to outdo men at masculinity, maleness, and manhood. That's how they made women feel in order to organize crime. So there was sexual murder. And organized crime had its own witchcraft and occult practices, where they would pretend to be these trained professionals who do those things just so they can feel like, okay, for example, in 2 years you'll be a kingpin, in about eight more months actually, you'll be a queenpin. So that organized crime is its own version of witchcraft. I am not bigoted against witchcraft nor occult practices. I don't negatively judge people who do those things at all. I don't. So I'm just saying the difference between most people do occult practices and witchcraft. And then you have the organized crime versions of those things. So I'm not being hateful at all. So I believe in compassionate compassionate faithfulness when it comes to sex, meaning that you treat each other well, and you don't have to be married to do that. There's plenty of people who have proven they're not married, but they honor each other. Casual, even non-casual, you know. So there was sexual like drunkenness, you know, that I saw. I'm talking about the organized crime, not the non-organized crime, which is the peaceful one. So the lust of the organized crime relating to sex, sexuality, it's dehumanizing people, rendering us to objects and animals and items and things. But healthy lust is good in and of itself. So you had a lot of, in organized crime, I saw serial cheating and serial adultery, which absolutely, sadly, was the biggest reason why I had, and I'm not proud of this, serial affairs in serial infidelity with wives or married women, if you will. They cheated on their spouses and life partners, and spouses and even life partners they weren't married to with me. I was never the cheater. I was someone they cheated with. And I'm not glorifying any of those things. I'm actually discouraging all those things extremely, fiercely, and strongly. So many people feel like You know, the sexual hatred was real. I just wanted to say that. Now to get back to what I'm saying. So many people from what I saw in organized crime, they indulged the flesh wrongly. They did not indulge the flesh wholesomely. When, even when it came to sex, they did not serve one another humbly in compassionate neighborly love. They gratified the criminalistic desires of their organized crime-based flesh. They did not wholesomely gratify the compassionately neighborly desires of their compassionate neighbor-based flesh. So their fleshes and their spirits were not contrary to each other, because their flesh and their spirit was one and the same in terms of being diabolical. When it comes to who I am, my flesh and my spirit are not contrary because they both exude compassionate neighborliness. There were some people in organized crime, from what I remember, that they were absolutely made fun of if they were circumcised. They felt like real men, you gotta have the penis and penile foreskin be all the way shown. And some women in the organized crime world felt that a man should have all his meat, including the penis and penile foreskin. Even though a handful of them complained that, well, you know, I'm feeling the friction burn when I have sex with the man because his foreskin kind of gets in the way of orgasmic penetration. I remember hearing that. Of course, they said it in uneducated ways. I'm just saying what they said in an educated manner. They said it rather crassly. I'm able to decipher it and put the dictionary to what they said. I think about how they were the guys who, some guys defied organized crime, said, you know, got the foreskin, the penis cut off. And some women said, man, the sex is so much better because I keep coming and the penetration feels more relaxing. They said these things rather crassly, but I'm just saying what they said in an educated manner. And I remember in organized crime how a lot of women were like, circumcision is crazy. I have much better sex with uncircumcised dudes than the circumcised dudes. So even organized crime, the one I was in, forced to be in particular, there was a we agreed to have the best sex, but you know, they would argue over circumcision, uncircumcision. It was weird. Traumatic is also what I say. There was no sexual love, and organized crime was all sexual hate. There were a lot of selfish sexual desires and selfish sexual actions. And I tell myself, it's good to have selfless sexual desires and selfless sexual actions. Not excluding sexual self-care, of course. So I just want to say, Thank you for understanding why I'm eradicating sexual distortions. And more importantly, thank you for understanding why I'm providing even orderliness attached to both sex and sexuality.